So I pack my bags. The car is running. Totally not. You have to put up with me for another 3.5 months. So for those of you who are impatiently waiting, good luck. You got a ways to go. I just am so excited for you. And I'm so excited with you in this news that you heard this morning. I'm not going to say a whole lot, but I'm just, I'm very happy. Whenever I hear these announcements, whenever I know they're coming, and I know in advance of their coming, I celebrate with the church because I live to come and to go. And when I get an announcement like this, the church can continue to be more focused into the future, and that just always delights my heart. So I'm just very delighted for you as a church. Let me pray. Father, I just thank you for the news this morning of Josh and Michelle coming and their kids, and I would just pray for them even now that you would continue to prepare their hearts and their minds. Help them to focus, all of those things necessary, God, so that when they arrive here in a number of weeks, Lord God, that they will just begin a long and blessed ministry here at West Heights. And for the church, Jesus, I just pray the same. I just pray, God, that there would just be this anticipation about what you will do as a new couple come, a new family becomes a part of us and walks into the future with them together. And I just pray, Jesus, that that anticipation would just be built on your promise to build your church. And I thank you for that, Father. Now, God, I just pray that you would help us to have eyes to see the truth that we might see as we view it on the screen or wherever. I pray that you would prepare our minds to understand what you want to teach us. And I pray, God, that you would touch our hearts to embrace that truth that you're teaching. And God, more than anything, I pray that you would just speak into our wills so that when we hear your gentle voice telling us to do something this morning because of what you've taught, that we would just gladly do what you ask. And I pray that in Jesus' name, amen. Well, they say it's hard to hug a porcupine, and I've never tried. I just don't think it would end well. I've seen images of dogs and so on that have tried to be friendly to porcupines, and it hasn't worked. For the same reason, I've tried not to get too close to skunks either, at least not intentionally. I sense that if I did, I would regret it. And when I was younger, cousins of mine in Northern Ontario, when we were at Grandma and Grandpa's, encountered a skunk. I was one of the ones that climbed the tree. One of my cousins wasn't so fortunate. I was at the dentist this week also. 2 days in a row, having a filling replaced and a tooth repaired. And while I was lying in that chair with a frozen face, metal instruments, and noisy tools in my mouth, I decided that I really didn't want to make a lot of room in my life for dentists. Not that I compare them to porcupines or skunks, but I just, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to become good friends. And personally, I've made fun of animals, but I actually do like dogs and cats. But I've always regretted making room in my heart for them because they do eventually not become your pets anymore for one reason or another. But the truth is, what can simultaneously be possible, possibly the scariest thing and potentially the most beautiful thing, is choosing or allowing ourselves to have a growing attachment to people, to making more room in our hearts for others, like the ones that you actually get along with at work, or the classmate you seem to have a lot in common with, or the neighbor you politely wave at and say hi, but that's all you do, or the one you notice who has been coming to church for a while or for a long time. Making more room in our hearts for others is truly risky. Risky. The truth about risk is that creating more room for your heart for people always involves risk, but doing the opposite can be worse. Experience has taught many of us that it's better to be guarded about allowing others into our lives than it is to be open-minded. It's been our experience. Yet the blessing of real connections often far outweigh the risk of the fear of connecting with other people. I want to read a quote from Dr. Henry Cloud in his book, 9 Things You Simply Must Do. He writes that success and failure alike arise from what is going on inside, and the wise person is the one who pays attention. There's very little growth and reward in life without taking risks. As the parable says, the one who buried his treasure in the ground did it to avoid risk of loss, failure, and disapproval. In the end, though, he reaped all 3 of these disasters. Clearly, avoidance of risks is the greatest risk of all. Healthy risk, he says, is calculated, integrated, and then executed with diligence and thoughtfulness. In other words, we tend to take risks when we're fairly confident that that good may come of it, especially with people. We filter things. One of the most profound and insightful observations about risk was spoken by Bill Hull. And Bill Hull said this, "Behold the turtle. He makes progress only when he sticks out his neck." I sat and I thought about that. And I thought about it. And I thought, it is so true. And it's not about the speed of the turtle. It's about the fact that he goes nowhere unless his neck is out. Nowhere. Some of the greatest risks we take in our attempts to get to know people and to let them into our lives and to make room for them, especially in our hearts. We can do it mentally, we can do it physically, we can bring them to our house, let them come in, but until we get to a point of risking them becoming a part of how we feel about them, rather than just the cranial kind of stuff, it takes it to a different level. The bottom line is that you and I cannot experience more attention in our relationships without having more understanding in our communication. And we will not have more understanding in our communication without making more room in our hearts for other people. And we will not create more room in our hearts for other people unless we are willing to take the risk of letting it happen. So let me speak just for a moment about the matter of capacity. Capacity speaks of the ultimate limit of something, the maximum amount that can be contained. You can apply it in all kinds of scenarios. And every one of us has limits for different things. My capacity for jogging, driving, reading, working, eating, sleeping, and socializing is a whole lot different than yours. A whole lot different. You are who you are, and your limits, your capacities, are just a real reality for your life. You and I can only fit so many things in our schedules. You can only seat so many people in any given room in your house. Unless you have the BC that seats 250. Some of you had to be there for that. The bigger picture is, you can only swipe or tap your credit card so many times. You can only put a certain amount of things in your garage, and you can only handle so many significant relationships. It's a fact. But I believe that most people have not maximized their people capacity, and I know it's true of myself. Everywhere I go, God has given me the ability to allow more people into my heart, made more room for more people, and it stretches me, it challenges me, but it's possible. The number of friends on Facebook is an artificial, I think an inaccurate measure of your real friends, because clicking what you like and who you allow to be your friend has nothing to do with making room for them in your heart. They are a number. Distant acquaintance, whatever you might call them, but not the kind of friend, not the kind of person that you would say, I have this person here that I could trust, that I could do all those things with. But I believe that most people haven't maximized their people capacity. Most of us have reached what I would call an artificial limit to our capacity of letting people into our hearts and lives. And it may be because we've been burned by someone before, or maybe we've allowed other less important things to rob us of the time and energy to let other people in. It's easier to let lesser important things get in the space of our lives that doesn't allow us to have the room or the time or the energy to do it. But to have more room in your heart for others involves a choice to enlarge the capacity, sometimes by removing some of the things that prohibit it from expanding. Saying what's really important. I've had that conversation with a number of people over the last few weeks. If you're going to do this, which we have the propensity of doing, we have the propensity to add things. The harder part is deleting things that are either competing or really don't make the additions feasible. We just keep adding and adding and adding, and then we go to people complaining why I am so stressed out and so burnt out. Because I keep saying yes instead of no. I keep going when I should be stopping. I keep moving forward when I need to pause. We discover in the second letter of the church to Corinth that the Apostle Paul understood the meaning and the value of making more room in your heart. That's what we're going to be following this morning in chapter 6, just a few verses from 2 Corinthians. There were a lot of issues in the church in Corinth, and a lot of those issues had names and faces. It was always names and faces. It wasn't that, you know, that the pulpit was in the wrong place or that somebody played off key. The issues were always people. Always people related. Paul could have remained guarded, distant, closed, defensive, but he knew what mattered, that what really mattered was the power of connecting with people. Even people he totally disagreed with, even people that he didn't maybe appreciate their perspective. But life is built on relating, and relating can't be done from a distance. And more importantly, connecting would never happen without having an open heart toward the people around him. That was Paul's perspective. He had this amazing capacity wherever he went to have an enlarged capacity with new people. You read through most of his letters, he's talking about people, thanking people by name, in their circumstances, saying where they lived, and many of them what they do, who they are. He got to know them just as much as it was difficult, we would think, to have so much time to do that. So he writes this in verses 11, 13 of 2 Corinthians 6. Oh, dear Christian friends, we have spoken honestly with you and our hearts are open to you. There's no lack of love on our part, but you have withheld your love from us. I am asking you to respond as if you were my own children. Open your hearts to us. I read those few verses. I've been reading them for quite a few weeks now. Every time I read them, it's like, wow. It's just all about this connecting point with other people that's totally possible if people are willing. So let's consider a few things about what it takes to make more room in your hearts for others. The first thing it takes, I think, is example. I think it's great when we see people doing things. When Josh was here a couple of weeks ago, I was watching him. I pay attention. I want to learn things. And he's an exceptional speaker. He's so practical. Like, I got him. I understood what he was saying. I could go home with something. And it was so amazing. I told him afterwards, and honestly and truthfully, how he communicated. I learned from him. Because I'm a learner. I want to be better. I want to do what I do more efficiently. But we learn from example. Paul's capacity to make room in his heart for people was directly related to his heart's capacity to know and love God, to get into his heart. You understand what I'm saying? It's because he made room in his heart for Jesus that Paul modeled what it was like to consistently take the risk to pursue heart-level relationships with people everywhere he traveled. Now, I always keep in mind that people like Paul, and some of you are like this, are high-capacity people. You just have this ability to draw people in and to make connections or whatever it would be much easier than some of us who aren't. Introverts who'd rather stay in the background or whatever. And some people are wired differently with this higher capacity. Doesn't mean that your capacity can't change. A couple of observations. The first is this. The capacity of our hearts determines the depth of our relationships. The capacity of our hearts determines the depth of our relationships. It's like the size of your car determines how many people you can cram into it. I learned that in Bible college. We had one of our friends at EBC who always said yes when people wanted to borrow his car. I don't know why he did. I just want to say his name out loud, but that would be therapeutic for me, but not for you. But he always did. And somebody always played practical jokes on him. He had a standard, so they would unscrew his gear stick. So he'd come in his car, and there'd be no, I can't do anything. Another guy was kind of a pyrotechnic, dangerous guy. So he would wire the car that when you open the door, smoke bomb would go off under the light. It's all kinds of things. Or we'd come out of the dorm room, and this little car would be between two trees. People are interesting. But with that little car, you could only really cram maybe five people in there, and that would be painful. I'm amazed at how many people you can get in a bigger car. The capacity of your heart determines the depth of your relationships. Correspondingly, the depth of relationship corresponds to the openness of heart. If you have a closed heart toward other people, and my experience, one of the greatest learnings in understanding that to me is watching how people respond to people who bully, shame, however, hurt other people. And it's called a couple of primary things, wounding of the spirit or the closing of the spirit. And this bright, excited young boy who's always active all of a sudden becomes this morose kind of, because the spark is gone. So there's no longer openness. And sometimes that's true of us. The depth of relationship corresponds to the openness of our heart. Our openness for a relationship with Jesus is the example, the pattern, the picture of our relationship with others. He's forgiving, he's understanding, he's so patient. He's all of these things. In other words, the relationship with God is the natural segue to having a relationship with other people. Paul wrote this in Ephesians 3, verses 14 to 17. When I think of all of this, I fall to my knees and pray to the Father, the creator of everything in heaven and earth. I pray that from his glorious, unlimited resources, he will empower you with the inner strength through his spirit. Then Christ will make his home in your hearts as you trust in him. Learn about Jesus, understand Jesus, trust in Jesus, give your life to Jesus, and he takes up residence inside of you. Why? Because you've made room for him in your heart by invitation, by choice. These words, make his home, it refers to a permanent habitation as opposed to this occasional visit. He wants to be there. So when you open your heart to God, then Christ can make his home in your heart by faith, and the presence of God in your life enlarges your heart's capacity to love others and to embrace them. And they you. This is what Paul is saying in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 11, when he begins those three verses. Oh, dear Christian friends, there's depth of relationship there. There's this dynamic between them that's just irreplaceable. Second of all, making room in your hearts for others also takes initiative. I had to learn to take initiative. After I had come back to Bible college, after I had quit Bible college because I realized where God might be leading me, which is to a place like this, after I came back and started on that journey to what ended up being a youth pastor and just everything else, initiative confronted me all over the place. Will you do a funeral? Can you do this? Can you do that? And it's like, I've never done that before. Of course, there's examples, there's people you could talk to, but you had to take initiative. And it's tough to take initiative. Initiative here, in our context, is related to two areas. The first is honesty. Honesty. Verse 11 says, we have spoken honestly with you. Literally means to pour out one's mind, to speak openly and frankly. In other words, when you're with people that you can really connect with deeply, that are really close, that you want to have this connection with. You don't always talk about the weather. It doesn't matter the mileage in the car or when you got to change the oil. It doesn't matter necessarily that we have to talk about the kids all the time. There's deeper things that we talk about as we deepen in our connections with each other. And honesty is key to that. It's not a time to play games or anything. I still remember sitting across the coffee table on the couch. They're sitting on two chairs, our counseling couple, when Juan and I went for our intensive. And I remember the one statement that they made the very first morning of the very first of the 5 days that were just like looming before me. He says, today we're going to have each of you tell your stories. And he said, this is the time to say everything. Because if you don't say everything, we will not know the right tools to use to help you. Now, that was scary. Comes out, by the end of it all, a lot of things that I was scared that would be heard, Wanda knew anyway from years and years and years before, from when we were dating and telling her everything about ourselves. But it's that place of being vulnerable, that place of honesty where you need to speak the truth and you don't play games and you just don't waste time talking about stuff that's irrelevant. The second piece is openness. We've spoken honestly to you and our hearts are open to you. The word literally means to make broad, enlarged. He's saying that the heart's capacity to allow people in and to engage people more deeply is possible. It's possible to be enlarged. The capability is there. It's just a matter of doing and preparation. Note that the heart's capacity to allow others can be expanded. It's important. Our hearts are open to you. This phrase, together, we have honestly spoken to you and our hearts are open to you, literally means this: I am speaking to you frankly with an open heart, hiding nothing of my life from you. One author says to have the heart wide open means there are no secrets in it. Paul tells them there is room for you in my heart. Literally, it is ready to take you in, and I long to have you there. That's the sense of this phrase. The third is that making room in your hearts for others also takes reciprocity. If it is a one-way street, and I think probably all of us have experienced this, it's just you in the relationship, really. The other person is just looking at the stars, at the floor. It's like they're putting up with you. They're just waiting to go to do something else. Then Paul says this in verse 12. There's no lack of love on our part, but you have withheld your love from us. He's saying we've done everything that we can to demonstrate that you can trust us, that we care about you, that it's important and all of these things, but you. So here we see that the heart's capacity to allow others can also be restricted. Not only enlarged, but we can also cut it down. There's no lack of love on our part. It means there are no restrictions, nothing preventing, blocking, or crowding out our hearts from being open to you. It's like saying, we're all in. We're all in. I had an email a few weeks ago now of a colleague of mine wanted to get together with me and another person just to talk about some really substantial stuff and presenting this is what I envision. And I'm not sure if the individual was what kind of response that they were expecting, whether it be a long response or not. But my response simply was, I'm in, Bill. You sold me. I'm convinced. It's worth it. So this is Paul's passion. This was the people that were with Paul. They loved them. They loved the Corinthians. But then we see this word, but. But you have withheld your love from us. Tragically, the relationship is not reciprocal. There's no mutual flow of the gut-level feelings like compassion and tender affection that make relationships possible, let alone thrive. It wasn't reciprocal. It was restricted. The word withheld literally means to crowd into a narrow place. In the New Testament, figuratively, it means to be constrained, reserved, unable to express oneself. It's a sense of tightness. The word withheld means literally in another place to crowd into a narrow space. A narrow space. The English word, I always check my dictionaries because I want to find out what things mean. It's just me. It's a weird word. The word was straitened. You're straitened. I thought, what's that? And it's not like a straight line, but an old phrase. If you're in trouble, we used to say that you're in dire straits. And there's this sense of constriction, of being in a tight place. The Oxford Canadian Dictionary defines straight or straitened as restrict in range or scope, make or become narrow. It's like locks in a canal. You can only get a big boat so big through it. And there's more locks and more locks. It only lets so much through. It's like the neck of a bottle. Only so much can get in and only so much can come out at a time. It's like the arteries of the literal heart that allow for healthy blood flow. And where there are valve issues with a car, the valve issues with the heart are a little more significant. Or it's like I'd say, it's like a piggy bank. You can only let so much in, and you can only take so much out at a time. I brought a friend. I haven't looked at this guy for a long time, till this morning. Very fragile. He's older than me, so he's probably in his 60s. He's very gentle. Come on. Her name's Katie, C-K-T. That's what it says. I didn't name her. My dad used to collect coins, buckets of coins. And Katie was, I lived at home, Katie was filled with dimes. And when you fill this pig is heavy. Like, we're talking a real porker, pun intended. And you can only get so much in here at a time. Now, if you look really closely, you see all the scratches? Oh, did you hear that? Oh, bonus. Maybe it's a dime. All those scratches are from me trying to get money out. And I wasn't too successful, because when you shake, you can only get so much out. But the back end, that's where the plug was. But still, no, that's so rude. You can only get so much in, and you can only get so much out. And when things are restricted, there's only one way to really deal with it. And if you're crazy enough to get into something like this, you would smash the pig to get at the money. But when your life is in a place with other people that you want to get close to, and there's this sense on their behalf that I just won't go there, it's really awkward. It's difficult to change people's hearts towards you. But our responsibility is to do what we can to have an open heart toward others, by example, showing them that it's safe, that it's possible. Many of us see this reciprocal relationship as risky and sometimes too risky. I'd say there's two fears related to reciprocity, and that the first is the fear of vulnerability. I know a lot of people that just don't want to be vulnerable. You ask them questions, and they say yes or no answers, even if it's an open question. You ask them to tell their story, and they'll hint at something, and you're like, and nothing. Being transparent, genuine, authentic, to expose my real self, to open my heart to people, is likened to danger for a lot of people. And there's reasons why. There's always reasons why. Blessed is the one who understands why, who takes the time to love and to care and to respect enough to help and to understand someone's journey so that you can have compassion or whatever is needed to nurture that relationship. But if we're in this place, then I must face the frightening question when it comes to vulnerability. What if they don't like me? I know teenagers ask themselves that all the time. So do adults. We're so afraid that somebody won't like us. And I think that's one of the things that I chuckle with over Facebook, when someone unfriends someone. Now we just block them. But the worst is to unfriend them. Now, since a lot of it's artificial anyway, it shouldn't matter. But we do take it personally. I don't have Facebook, so it doesn't matter. But when you unfriend someone, we just if they don't like me, what do I do? How do I handle that? Vulnerability is one, but the fear of rejection or betrayal is the other. Here we face the daunting question, not just what if they don't like me, but what if they don't accept me for who I am? For a number of years now, I just love the fact that I don't care what people think about me anymore. No arrogance, no attitude. I'm just totally good with who I am. Doesn't matter what happens. Doesn't matter what people, what their looks are, what they say. I listen. I pay attention because, again, I want to be a learner. If I need to change something, I can do that. But Bill is Bill. And that's what Bill brings to the table. It's why so many of my friendships that are close and personal work, because the two people on either side of the table are totally who they are, and they're good with all that. Even the weird parts are just fine with that. But Paul makes a personal appeal in verse 13. He says, I'm asking you to respond as if you were my own children. Open your hearts to us. He appeals to them. Don't stay like that. Don't stay distant. Don't allow all those things that are between us to continue to be between us. Become like kids to me. Paul's using the language of reciprocity. Do this together. The word respond literally speaks of giving something in return, paying back. In other words, I opened up to you, open up to me. It's safe to do that. It's good to do that. Enlarging our capacity may take time, may need healing, forgiveness, but it will always take risk, but it's worth the risk. There are people all around you who are longing for this connection. A few verses later in Paul's letter, so maybe it would take 10 minutes for Paul to read what he read in chapter 6, and then just not, it wouldn't even take that long. In chapter 7, he says this, 2 Corinthians 7:2. Paul once again leads by example, takes the initiative, and appeals to them for a reciprocal relationship of love and grace when he says this, "Please open your hearts to us. We've done you no wrong, nor led anyone astray, nor taken advantage of anyone." In other words, you can trust us, but please open your hearts to us. The thing that I found different here than earlier was the word open here is different than the other one. The word literally can be translated as receive. Receive us, embrace us, welcome us. Don't just open your hearts to us. May the act of opening be like a hug or something tangible. It's a challenge when we read this. There's a sense of urgency to us. It means to give space to provide a place for, to make room, to yield. The New American Standard literally translates this phrase, make room for us in your hearts. Because it's possible. He knew it was. So daily we face the choice of either enlarging or diminishing our capacity in our hearts. And the old axiom is true. You always have time for what you value and for what is important. And I think it's true for people. You always have room in your hearts to the people who really matter to you. And it's a choice we make all the time. So let me shift as I conclude. It may seem like a long way off, but it isn't. In 14 weeks, from today, you will have to make a conscious choice as to whether or not you will make more room in your heart for Josh and Michelle, for Silas and Isaac. I have known, it's been my experience as a transition pastor, when an interim pastor comes, it's very difficult for a lot of people to want to get close and come to, and get to know an interim pastor, because our capacity is down because of what we've lost. Totally understand it. So when I say that it's an intentional effort on our part to make room in our hearts for a new pastoral couple, it's a literal fact. It's reality. Learning to trust, all those things. And so it makes this even more beautiful that this message fit the Sunday that Doug makes the announcement, because that's what it's all about. It's beginning a journey again, continuing a journey just with new leadership. Remember the turtle. You will make progress only when you stick out your neck. And I pray when it comes to Josh and Michelle coming before you, that there would be this overwhelming surge of welcome and joy and celebration together. A couple of takeaways. The what question, what can I do to increase the capacity for others? The who question, who does God want me to make room for? I pray that you'd ponder, because the state of our heart, the capacity, where we are right now, can change. And change is always a choice, and sometimes a hard choice, but a good choice. Father, thank you for your word, for the challenge that you present to us when it comes to things like this. Many times, God, we just don't like to make it so personal. But you lead us, Father, into joyful relationships. And I pray, God, that that would continue day by day as we walk with you and do what we can with the people around us as you guide. Thank you, Jesus. Amen.